I'm joined by Rhys Bebb, the Education and Training Manager at Screen Alliance Wales, or SAW. Hi, Rhys, to you. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. I was slightly terrified by the thought of a fireside chat. It's been looming because I thought there's the context of being close to an open fire at the moment is not the most pleasant thought. But
can have an ice cool chat instead on a beach with a pina colada or something. Welcome to you. And we're also joined by Jack Neal, our very own technical lead at the VR Hive. Hi, Jack.
Hi. How are you doing? You all right?
Yeah, you managed to keep cool.
Just about. I've had to relocate my office downstairs, but all's good.
Fantastic. Okay, great. So I thought we'd come together to have a chat to discuss our recent collaboration to build a 360-degree video studio tool for Rhys. So welcome to you both. Perhaps we can kick things off with just kind of giving an outline of the project and kind of how it came about. So I know, Jack, you were quite initially involved at the beginning. Perhaps you want to kind of kick that off?
Sure thing. So I worked for SAW a number of years ago and just remember what a sort of a good organisation they were to work for. And then when we started working on the VR Hive and everything that entailed, I thought I'd reach out to see if there was anything that we can assist them with, any projects that they wanted to do with regards to education and the 360 filming. And it just so happened, I mean, I'm sure Rhys will correct me if I'm wrong, but they were planning on doing a 360 tour anyway, and had been in the process of creating a 360 tour with images anyway. So it really was perfect timing. Everything just sort of slotted into place at the right time.
Okay, Rhys, coming over to you.
Yeah, well, it's you know, really, I started on the at SAW on the day that the UK went into lockdown back in 2020. So it was sort of very from my start at the organisation. It was all about, okay, we've got a very unusual situation here, but I think when we were revising and looking at how things were going to have to adapt, we were always thinking about, rather than what are we going to do to adapt to now, it was about, right, okay, if we're going to need to adapt to the current situation, what resources are also then therefore going to be useful beyond the end of the pandemic? So we always had this kind of plan that we've started sort of generating sort of our resources in an online platform. That the idea of having that kind of interactivity, we previously would have been able to sort of, we regularly get, you know, hundreds of kids down every year down. We've got a custom made classroom down at the studio. Mm. And that was one of our key sort of selling points, so to speak. But how do we reach that out to people? And particularly the fact that I was coming from a perspective that I'm the Welsh language education training and education manager. And it's about sort of reaching out to sort of the more diverse communities, more diverse sort of geographically, ethnically, economically. So the whole idea of having kind of a virtual tour so that people can interact from wherever they are was kind of, again, these are the things that were kind of accelerated in need by obviously the pandemic. But where we got to, and sort of we discussed the idea of having a virtual tour, as sort of Jack had intimated, but it was we're coming up to new technologies, and it's trying to sort of like, things exist in pockets and is trying to bring things together. And I honestly don't think without sort of having the guidance from VR Hive, we wouldn't have been in a position to actually put it all together. Basically, yeah. The you know, we had a GoPro that would record 360 images, but we had things to put things in place on a static basis, but then transferring that And I think it was good that we've taken the time to sort of explore that. But having the offer come through from a VR Hive has been so beneficial for us.
Yeah, so Rhys, coming back to the 360 tour, and obviously choosing the medium of VR, did you look at any other sort of teaching approaches or resources that were out there? And why was it sort of the 360 tour that you really went for?
The 360, I mean, it's about sort of getting that, I don't think there's any other way of getting that feeling of place. You know, we have a load of resources that talk about sort of we are developing alongside the VR tour other resources, but I think that there's nothing else that gives a sense of place of being able to turn around and see what's there. You know, we've discussed the fact that what we want people to get is like, yes, there are some sort of cavernous rooms at the studio, but there are other rooms that are basically mundane offices. Yeah. And I think this is a kind of that kind of diversity of, you know, the kind of almost small warehouse nature of the costume department was just rails of clothes, you know, sort of with one work table, you know. It's just about conveying what the industry is like. I think there's so much, you know, so much fantastic stuff that goes on in TV. And we're fortunate at the studio, we're producing sort of currently the third series of His Dark Materials. It's a high-end TV production, which means by its nature that every episode costs at least £1 million.
Wow.
Now, I'm not party to know exactly how much each episode costs, but if they do make it for £1 million an episode, when you go around and see the set, you're left thinking, how do they manage to make it for £1 million? You know, when you see all the people around, the supporting artists, the catering, and all these starts of, so it's trying to get that awe and wonder that I'm fortunate to experience on a daily basis, but try and convey that kind of, you know, that kind of multidisciplinary nature of the industry to students. Because we have people that are passionate about working in TV and film, but in reality, don't know that much about what to expect on their first day. We get people suddenly saying, oh, I didn't realise we were doing this. Or I didn't realise we stood around. Well, actually, no, that's part and parcel.
I mean, I am one of those people, Rhys. I think of TV set, all glamour and glitz and all the stuff going on, you know, it's all luxurious. And actually seeing your tour, I was like, whoa, right, okay, that's what it looks like. So I was quite taken aback, you know. Yeah. So it worked. So that tour actually educated me in your, you know, studio and what a studio really looks like. Authentically, probably more so, I don't think I would have bothered to look at a picture or a video. That was far more interactive. So just for me on a personal level, I really kind of enjoyed the tour with my education hat on. So Jack, I wonder whether you could just describe for our listeners what exactly a 360 video tour is, but describe a few features and rough broadly production.
Yeah, sure thing. So a 360 video tour can be as simple as purely a 360 video with like a voiceover over the top, talking you through what you're seeing. You know, that's the sort of really base level of it. So you could produce that on, you know, a commercial 360 camera really quite easily, and then just recording a voiceover over the top. But what we've gone for with the Screen Alliance Wales tour is an interactable tour where, yes, you can look around and see the entire space that you're in, but you could also select hotspots, so select buttons within the 3D space, within the 360 space, and that will take you on to the next section, so the next piece of 360 footage, really.
I noticed there's some really interesting sort of video footage in there as well. I mean, it was that something that was added in to that as well in post-production phase?
Yeah, for sure. So Rhys was kind enough to furnish me with a good-sized list of different videos that we wanted to include within the tour. So you can position those in the space, so it's not taking up too much of the viewer's sort of viewpoint. You know, they can turn around, there's a video screen, let's have a look at what that video is of. And as well as that, Rhys has recorded some pieces to camera, some 2D videos to camera as well. which we've integrated within the tour, which give a bit of an explanation of the room, of the environment that you're in, without taking the user out of that environment, which is something that we think is really key. Because initially what we planned on was having your pieces to camera reach be in 360 as well. Mm. But we found that that, you know, moving out of that space takes you out of that environment. So keeping you in that environment with Reese talking at the same time, it really encapsulates everything that's that goes on in that room, goes on in that environment.
And I think what you're picking out there, Jack, is really important in terms of co-design. So when we think of co-design, it's about creating with the stakeholders that we're working with, business customers, to make sure that product is meeting the needs of that user. So you've already kind of started talking a little bit about that. So how did this project kind of unfold to embed those principles of co-design in from the beginning? I don't know whether you both want to give a comment on that sort of process or how you've engaged together, how you've worked together to produce this piece of content.
I think from my perspective, I mean, it's I've been aware of VR and the whole concept of 360 for quite a few years. It's something I've explored. I've dipped in and out of. You know, I can probably look back the last 10 years whereby, well, actually, I can go back to sort of the late 90s of going to with my friends to London and going to the Trocadero sort of and going in the arcade system with this heavy headset that put in your head that you could only hold on for about 10 minutes before it started sort of like weighing down and sort of on your neck with those geometric shapes just going around. And yeah, obviously, and every time there's been a development within it, I've always kind of gone, right, okay, is this a time where we can actually get in and use this? And there's been bits and pieces whereby there's been, dare I say it, false dawns, whereby, you know, people have come and tried something, but one bit of technology doesn't exist without the platform, and sort of, so they've not always happened in conjunction. And I think in the last few years, we've started to see, from my perspective, schools, and I've worked within the sort of the TV and film sector in Wales, and I've seen the sort of like that schools are starting to adopt VR. So I knew that it was something which I'm hoping, I'm sort of, you know, I was confident that the time has now come that I think we're getting to that sort of point whereby there's opportunities for it to The platforms are there, the hardware is becoming more sort of at a sensible level for schools to invest in. It's just a question, at the same time, being somebody who's just sort of from the outside, I don't have the vocabulary always to be able to understand everything. So from my perspective, it was a question of, I was able to talk in some very woolly terms and and talk about images here, yeah, and then be able to put that to Jack, and Jack will be able to say, oh, yes, this is this software that is what we're going to be using. This is what, this is the equipment we're going to be using. And this is sort of like, so it is a question of, I've got a notion of what VR is about. I've seen it work, but the actual sort of mechanics of it is a different kettle of fish. And I think from my perspective, it's not a question of, it's important to have the relationship we have had, because there's no point me bulldozing through with saying things. It has to be a sort of a two-way communication and a conversation, you know, and coming back with, this is what works best, this is how we could do it, you know.
And so I guess kind of working with the VR Hive as well, it's kind of helped, like you said, you've had some ideas about VR, you've seen it at the arcade, 90s, you've seen it become more prominent, but to actually understand how it works, what's possible, I guess that's part of, you know, sort of a bit of an education around it as well, to realise your ambition in an achievable way, because people, it's easy to get carried away with VR because of all the great things you can think it can do, but actually to bring that down to something that's going to work for you and that is going to be suitable for your key stakeholders and your audience at the end of the day as well. I mean, Jack, coming to you, what kind of equipment does the 360 tool need to run on? Because there's always a perception when you say VR, people thinking these big bulky headsets or things like, you know, some of the headsets, high-end £1,000 headset. Is it really that expensive to get started?
No, not at all, really, because I mean, this project, initially we're developing it for a browser version, for the screen Screen Alliance Wales website. So you'll be able to access it purely on the website. But I think in the future developments, we're looking at doing a mobile phone version as well, mm-hmm. which you can actually physically put in a cardboard headset, for example, and look around the space. I don't know why I'm doing it, looking around in my living room.
Just for the audience, Derek's actually looking around and acting out the Google cardboard, which is great.
So yeah, you'd be able to do that. I mean, it's something like 84% of individuals in the UK have a smartphone. And the 16% that don't, I think the vast majority are of the 60 plus age group, which isn't overly surprising, I would say. So out of that 84% of people, individuals with smartphones, the vast majority of them will be able to run some form of VR, even at its base level. Things like YouTube VR, for example, is a really fun and really exciting place to go to watch 360 and VR content. So you can do it from, you know, the phone that's in pretty much everyone's pocket. But then going all the way up to the other end, you could spend thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds on a fully professional, spec'd up, souped up VR headset that can track your very finger movements, your feet movements, your hip movements, absolutely everything, really. So the VR is for everyone. It's a real broad market.
I think I was going to say on that one, I talk about to put the pocket power of VR. I've when Oculus came out 2012, 2013, it was all tethered. I had to go on that headset and I was just amazed. I just couldn't believe it. Just like my mouth, jaw dropped, everything, amazing. And then I got my iPhone 2.5 years ago and I was poking around and looking at VR then. And suddenly the realization that you could get VR on this phone. And I was like, excuse me, what? So I rushed out, got the Google Cardboard headsets and was trying everything I could find on the smartphone and really enjoying it. Because I think sometimes people think, oh, it's not as immersive or not as, you know, it's not competitive with the expensive headset. But I'd say that it is because I've enjoyed both the higher end and also the sort of the Google Cardboard. So there is some, you know, some merit in both, I think.
Draw a comparison, I suppose, on the same lines of what we've been talking about. It's almost like cinema as opposed to TV. You know, the mobile phone version is TV and the full headset is the cinema. Yes, people do enjoy and love going to the cinema, but people also enjoy watching TV. If they didn't, Rhys wouldn't be in a job, you know, pretty much, or he'd be in a different job, let's say. So I think that's a, you know, a decent way of looking at it. People absolutely love watching TV, love the silver screen. And I think that's what the handheld, the mobile phone version of VR represents really in the VR world.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, going back to you, Rhys, so thinking about the tool, what kind of, how are you going to use this brand new tool that's coming hot off the press, and what impact are you hoping it will have, perhaps from an education and business perspectives?
I think there's two strands that we were kind of aiming for. One is the fact, yes, okay, for those people who can't, there's a group of, we looked at the schools that have been visiting our studio in the past. As I've said before, we were looking, you know, post-pandemic, and it was still from a social aspect, we can see there's a certain group of schools that were, obviously geographically, we're getting a lot of more schools from Cardiff. There were schools maybe from not as privileged areas of Cardiff who weren't accessing, who could have done. So if we're producing something that goes going to be web-based, we're reaching out to those people. And certainly, you know, from the parts of I've been working sort of up in, you know, North Wales and from West Wales, we want to get these sort of experience of coming to the studio. We want to be able to get that out to a far broader audience to actually deliver our sort of, because we are Screen Alliance Wales, not Screen Alliance Southeast Wales, you know. The second thing is that the industry is complex. In our classroom, we've got this fantastic spider graph, which sort of illustrates sort of, you know, starting off, we've got, it covers the first series of his Dark Materials, where you've got kind of, you start off, you've got Philip Pullman, then you've got Jane Tranter, the head of Bad Wolf, and Jack Thorne. So they're the people who've come along. Jane Tranter with the production company with the idea, and then Jack Thorne as script writer. And then he just lines everywhere. And there's an entire wall that's covered with this. And we were trying to say, well, how do we get that across and show it to people? And it's trying to, how do you convey that complexity? And basically everything we did, you either then sterilize it to the point whereby you're cutting corners and you're oversimplifying, or you just, it's just a mess. So we're trying to find the happy medium, and sort of hopefully what this will do is, by allowing people to visit the different rooms, this will be the kind of entry point for people coming to learn about the industry. And then all the other resources that we've developed or are developing, that's this is kind of the bait to get people in. This is the visual thing. I mean, fundamentally, it's one of the fantastic things about TV within education, TV and film, or you know, video within education. It brings us people who, you know, who are not as comfortable with conventional literacy, reading, writing thing, that they can still express themselves and find a viable career, you know, within the industry that's on their doorstep. So those are the two strands that we're coming from, where we're trying to sort of reach out far broadly, but also we want something to be able to sort of to be the kind of flagship to tie all our other things together. This is the kind of entry point that you come to. So and it gives people that kind of again that kind of vocabulary to be able to go explore the rest of the industry.
I think that's really important as well, as reaching sort of hard to reach groups with this tool, because there are people that just won't have the confidence for whatever reason to actually physically come down to the studio to start with, and just having access to that is going to make them feel more comfortable, think, well, actually, yeah, I think I could come down now, you know, I've seen it once sort of thing, you know, I'll come down. And the fact that you've got something that's repeatable as well, so it's not just a one time, oh great, I've seen the studio, where I go, it's kind of something that they can go back to, repeat in their own time, and reinforce that experience and their learning, which I think is quite special. I know we've got so I'm the education and research lead as well, for these listeners. We're doing a survey as well with SOAR, which is going out to some of the user groups. So we're hoping to get some interesting data back on the tour, which will be really insightful. So we're excited for that. I'm just wondering, from a technical perspective, Jack, what sort of challenges did you come across along the way?
So I think the main challenges really has been, how should I put this? Everything takes a lot longer than we initially expected. And I think Reese will back me up on that one. So, you know, the minutiae of getting a hotspot or an info point in the right place, making sure all the buttons lead to the correct areas or the correct videos, things along those lines. It's just having being able to have a broad overview of the project as a whole, and also being able to have those sort of, as I said, that sort of the overview of the minutiae of each individual cog that's working in the machine. I think that's been the main challenge, really. Going out to the studio and shooting was, it was challenging from various points of view, and I'm sure Reese will pick up on that now in a minute sort of thing. I think just having that overview of the whole and the individual cogs has been the main challenge. From our point of view, I've had no issues when it's been come to speaking with Reese and discussing issues and problems and design features. So that hasn't been challenging at all. Working with Screen Alliance Wales. I think I'm rambling, so I'll hand that question over to Reese.
I'm just going to butt in and just say, guessing from what work you've been doing, it's been quite, you know, a learning point as well, because this kind of 360 and working 360 video, yes, it's been around for a while. Yes, you've got consumer cameras, but actually synthesizing it together and producing that something as educational is quite different, really, in many ways. And I guess there's lots of lessons to be learned, which we'll come on to in a moment. Sorry, Reese, I just butted my oar in. Off you go.
Yeah, I can sort of certainly empathize with the fact that sort of, it's just one of those things that naturally with any kind of creative project, you kind of, from my own experience at times where I've been, you know, producing sort of video content, and you kind of just get the times whereby you just get focused on certain things. And it's sort of, we've been developing a separate resource. I actually tried it out last week on pupils up in North Wales, and I realised I'd kind of like neglected to give certain sort of points of kind of context which were completely irrelevant to people outside of Cardiff. So I think you do, you know, it is sort of having that sort of, again, that comes back to that, it's important to have that conversation. And yeah, it is, TV sets are incredibly, the challenge has been in terms of, there's an incredible amount of secrecy that is involved and in sort of with any kind of production. I've had to sort of talk to people and said, oh yeah, but what difference is it if they just see this? And then I'm going, you know, I can then point to them to examples where somebody's sort of tweeted a picture from an upcoming film, and then there'll be some fans, particularly if it's a book adaptation, going like, oh, how many chairs are around that table? That means that this film from that scene, they're filming that scene today because they can count the number of chairs because so-and-so is absent, you know. So there's the kind of the, you know, so that has been significantly a challenge in terms of something that people are so familiar with, and some, you know, including myself, you know, the His Dark Materials books are a fantastic bit of literature I'd say it's aimed at young people, but I think there's sort of like so much sort of content within it that's sort of relevant to everybody that, you know, people do pick up on all sorts. You know, there was the whole issue with the naming of the golden monkey, because the subtitles in the series two, that somebody actually given the name to the golden monkey, at which point massive outcry on Twitter going, but the monkey doesn't have a name. Does he have a name? Then people are atting Philip Pullman going, is this the real name? Was this sort of like a mistake that they've let out? So there's all sorts of levels of fandom which kind of like explode in this sort of thing. And the monkey does not have a name. Well, you know,
Just to clarify,
it does not have a name. And sort of, you know, that has been clarified. But these are sorts of things that you kind of like, I think it stemmed from one of the, it might have been one of the puppeteers had given the puppet a nickname, which had somehow been leaked, and sort of to somebody had taken it upon themselves to use that as the name, by all accounts. I don't know, but sort of it's one of these things. The level of detail, specificity, that, you know, there's the industry is one which is evolving rapidly. You know, and I'm not talking about necessarily about, you know, we're not talking about VR, we're not talking about sort of, it's just general kind of, the another series they're currently filming is Industry, which is just about, you know, working in the sort of London finance sector. They're talking about sort of like filming series two, and the post-production department is saying our workflow has completely changed from series one. So in 12 months, the same group of people are completely adapting their workflow. So the industry is one that sort of is completely evolving. So it is sort of trying to keep track of everything. Some, you know, so it has been interesting to introduce VR into the mix, and people kind of like, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do? And give me some sly glances and kind of being really suspicious. But who's this for? And then you're going to, and so having to sort of go and talk to heads of department and say, well, this is what it's going to do. This is what we're going to do. This is the explanation. I think, oh yeah, that sounds like a great idea. So we're getting the buy-in. And I think, but you know, I'm positive that sort of like once the tour is up and running, I think that, you know, obviously I'm always conscious with sort of technologies. If you can't, nobody has a crystal ball and knows exactly what's going to happen. But I'm confident that this sort of thing is going to have vital sort of impacts. Where, you know, I'm talking to a school in who are using VR headsets, and the fact that they can give their pupils from an underprivileged part of South Wales, South Wales. You know, they can go and experience a beach in the South Pacific through a headset. They can experience being on the edge of a volcano, which are experiences which they probably would never have otherwise. They can go and experience what it is to sort of be underwater following a dolphin. You know, there's sort of, you know, these are these ones that do exist out there, and we're sort of and on top of that, it's just the fact that with the experiences that, you know, we're seeing sort of that global travel might be some more restricted with the sort of the because of the current sort of thing with, you know, thinking about the climate change, the sort of, you know, these are the ways that people are going to get experiences going forward, because the current technology just isn't going to allow travel to be quite as the same as it has been.
Yeah, and I think as well, going back to your previous point about schools and people sort of looking sideways and what's this about, I think that's part of an education, almost the beginning of a VR education movement, that just by having a discussion. So you planted this seed of this project, yet it's growing out, you know, it's a tree that's growing out and reaching other people. And the bigger that net, the tree grows, the better, because more awareness of it and more people would, I guess, consider exploring VR as a teaching tool. So what advice, guidance have you got for people, maybe organizations perhaps, who are sort of pondering VR and wondering whether to stick their toe into the VR river? So Jack, you want to any comments?
Yeah, sure. I suppose my main bit of advice, although I am biased working for a VR company, I suppose, would be just go for it. Jump in. Really start those conversations, start those discussions with companies like the VR Hive and the other VR companies out there. Have a look at what's available online. There are hundreds of 360 videos, VR videos online, and even 2D videos which explore the uses of VR. You know, it's as close to, as Reese was saying, it's as close to certain experiences you can get. Like, for example, if you're on if you're training people on a construction site, but you can't take 200 or however many people onto the site for health and safety reasons, you can virtually take them onto the site where they can interact with various pieces of equipment, you know, be it either via buttons and videos, similar to what we've done with the SOAR project, or we could do a completely graphical sort of version of VR where you could pick up a jackhammer and destroy a bit of concrete, or for example, you can take people to places that you can't go to unless you're a multimillionaire. And even then, you can invent places and invent scenarios that no one will ever be able to go to. You know, you could drop someone in the middle of, an alien planet with little green men running around, for example. The possibilities are as limitless as your imagination. I know that's a bit of a cheesy line, but that's really how I feel about virtual reality.
I just wanted to speak to the audience of, the VR Hive, we do hold monthly Eventbrite events where we do talk about VR, and it's a really nice way to come and meet the team and come and find out more about how to get started and the work that the VR Hive are doing. So do feel free to come on down and join us virtually. Reese, have you got any advice or tips for organisations thinking about VR?
Yeah, I'd say it's three tips really. In terms of one, it's echoing what Jack said. You need to get in and use it, and find some sort of like take the plunge. Because last week I was doing keyframe animation with kids in schools, and I taught them principles, and then 10 minutes later they were making boxes fly across the screens. They were making change color, expand, rotate, and the teacher saying, "Oh, what's the purpose of this?" And I'm saying, at the moment, I wouldn't worry about the purpose. Let them play. Let them find sort of where the thing going through. Mm. It's certainly opportunities. The second thing is, there's certainly, again, something Jack touched upon, is that the planning aspect. Mm. VR and 360 modeling is something that's used within industry to build sets virtually and guide the actual final set build, because you can sort of adjust things, think about camera positions and things like that. I think the long term, I think the third and final tip would be the fact that, and this is something we're just sort of seeing people that we're helping a lot of people with, is that no matter what the content, it's still you have to have that narrative. And I think sometimes, particularly with non-fiction content, we're seeing people doing documentaries and they're just kind of telling people how it is. Whereas I still think that even if you're doing nonfiction, you still need to have a kind of beginning, middle, and end to whatever you're presenting. Mm-hmm. So I think, get into it, dip your toe in, have an idea, as Jack said, there's loads of examples out there of what can be done, then, you know, there are massive opportunities of where it can be functional. And it's not a gimmick, that it has a really functional purpose. And then, but to make sure that you know, basically, what is the story? What is the message you're trying to tell via it? I think those are three things that I think would be very important for developing it in the future.
Fantastic. Some of the tips from both of you. Thank you so much for joining us on this hot Friday afternoon. We enjoyed to speak to you both, and I look forward to following you, Rhys and Saul, on your VR journey.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks.